You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
In June this year, the United Nations Human Rights Council adopted the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Only two nations voted against it. One of them was Canada. First Nations, Inuit, and Métis organizations in Canada were frustrated and disappointed with the Canadian government's effort to stall the declaration, a declaration which Indigenous peoples and others from around the world had worked on for 20 years. The declaration puts pressure on governments to live up to the objectives of the document and would serve to reinforce principles of justice, democracy, respect for human rights, equality, non-discrimination, good governance, and good faith. Celeste McKay is a Métis from Manitoba, and she acts as a consultant with the Native Women's Association of Canada. Red Eye Collective member Lorraine Chisholm spoke with her yesterday, and Lorraine began by asking what a human rights document like this could accomplish.
Really, what this declaration hopes to achieve is to set out a new relationship between Indigenous peoples and states. It's meant to encourage states to set upon a different relationship in which historic wrongs such as discrimination and colonization are overcome, and new types of partnerships that built on respect and equality are established.
So it's some kind of a guide that should have some kind of moral force.
Exactly. It's a guide meant to set out basic principles that should apply to the relationship with Indigenous peoples. And so declarations are seen as being aspirational in nature, because it isn't like a convention or a treaty where states ratify the documents. It's a principled document that informs international human rights principles more broadly.
Now, I understand that that Canada actually called for a premature vote at the Human Rights Council. Why did they do that?
I think what you may mean is that they are calling the vote at the Human Rights Council premature. They're saying we need more time to discuss the declaration, and that so they don't want to be seen as saying they're opposing the declaration. They just want more time for negotiations. So, but that really is a falsehood, because we know we've had enough time for discussions. We've had 20 years. And it's commonly understood that over time, especially over the past few years, we've been able to build the consensus around the majority of the provisions of the Declaration. And for the few provisions that did not receive explicit consensus, it was really a matter of one or two or a few states not supporting the wording. And we knew that we would never get to consensus on those provisions. So the text that was put forward by the chairperson rapporteur in February to the Human Rights Council is seen by almost all Indigenous peoples and states globally as being the most acceptable declaration that we'll ever be able to achieve.
Now, I understand that the outcome of the vote was that there were actually 30 states that showed up in favor. What did the other states do?
Well, 13 abstained, 3 were out of the room, and only 2 opposed, being Russia and Canada. So Canada is associated with Russia in terms of of their stance on the declaration, which doesn't speak very highly for their regard or concern about the human rights of Indigenous peoples.
Now, the Canadian government has been involved and somewhat supportive of the process of developing this document. They've been engaged in the past. How does the government under this new Conservative government explain this about face?
Well, they have argued that they're actually being, that these issues have been flagged in the past and their concerns about the declaration and that it isn't inconsistent. But again, this is just another falsehood. We know that Canada, over time, sure, Canada has indicated concern about different provisions, but in the end, in the final stages, they were real leaders in the working group, in forming discussion groups, sharing small group discussions about different provisions and coming up with language that all parties could accept. So now, on the very provisions that Canada helped to draft at the working group level, they are now saying they're inadequate or unacceptable. And even as late as this week in a meeting with Canadian representatives, when asked, well, if all the concerns listed were addressed, would the minister then be able to support the declaration? The answer was, well, not necessarily.
Right. What specific arguments did they put forward for what problems they felt there were with the declaration?
Well, one argument is that one argument they've made is that the provisions are contrary to the spirit of our Constitution, and really they're getting at individual human rights and the claim that the collective rights contained within the Declaration might supersede individual rights. And if you look in the Declaration, those concerns have been addressed by articles that call for a balancing between individual and collective rights, taking into consideration the values that Canadians hold dear, like justice, democracy, good governance, non-discrimination, equality. So again, those concerns are hard to view as being legitimate.
Now, what we're seeing, I think, what could be seen as a similar approach from the Conservative government on the Aboriginal fishery, where they're describing that fishery as racist. What do you make of this approach, which devalues collective rights of Indigenous people over individual rights?
Well, I think that shows a lack of insight into the nature of Aboriginal people's rights under Section 35 of our Constitution, and also the nature of our relationship, the relationship between Indigenous peoples and the Canadian government, which has historically dispossessed us of our lands, our territories, our resources, our ability to be self-governing, at a very detrimental cost. We know that with the Native Women's Association of Canada, one of their initiatives, the Sisters in Spirit initiative, looks at racialized, sexualized violence against Indigenous women. And those are women who are put in harm's way because of the overall social and economic marginalization of Indigenous women in this country. And that is very much linked to the collective rights of Indigenous peoples, because when we don't have an adequate land base, when we don't have access to sustainable economies, and we are pushed to the margins, our individual human rights, such as the right to live free from violence and the right to equality and non-discrimination, are put in jeopardy. And that is why this declaration is so important to us.
We know that there's been, as you were alluding to, there's been an incredibly high incidence of violence against Native women in Canada. We've seen it here, certainly in Vancouver, in our very own neighborhood here in the downtown east side. Do you think an international instrument like this declaration can have any material effect on the ground for women's situation?
I do. I think that as we push international human rights standards up and call on states and countries to remedy human rights violations that exist, we can have a concrete effect on a woman struggling in the east side of downtown Vancouver. I think, there's maybe not a direct causal effect that you can see in a year, but I think over time, as, 5 years ago there was no recognition in the general public that this was a huge problem. You know, it's taken a lot of pressure on the Canadian government at international fora to say, look at this situation of our women dying on the streets because of the discrimination and the social and economic marginalization they face is not acceptable. It's taken shaming Canadian governments internationally to get funding for the initiative. So I do think those things have an effect, although it takes time for them to be realized.
Now, I know that First Nations organizations have been both disappointed and quite outraged by the Canadian government's actions at the UN. What does this turnaround, this opposition to the declaration signal to Native folks in terms of the progress that First Nations issues are making in this country?
I think that it shows their understanding, or their lack of understanding, I guess, about Indigenous peoples' situations. I think it shows their absolute failure to work in partnership with Indigenous peoples. I mean, we had a very good relationship with the Canadian government before the change in government at the working group on the draft declaration, and we didn't always agree, but we had a very honest, frank dialogue and exchange. But whereas now we don't have that rapport, and that's been shown by the fact that they oppose the declaration, although Indigenous groups throughout Canada were advocating for the approval of the declaration.
And I understand that most of the opposition parties are on record as supporting the declaration as well.
Yeah, all three opposition parties have been on record as supporting the declaration, and that took place at the Standing Committee on Aboriginal Affairs, where they all voted to have Canada adopt the declaration at the Human Rights Council.
What are the ways, Celeste, that people can express their solidarity with First Nations people on this issue?
Well, I think people can contact their Member of Parliament, express how important this issue is to them, express that they, ask Canada to reverse its position and support the declaration at the General Assembly.
Thanks very much, Celeste. It's been good talking to you.
Thank you.
That was Red Eye Collective member Lorraine Chisholm speaking with Celeste McKay. She spoke with Celeste yesterday. Celeste is a Métis woman from Manitoba who acts as a consultant with the Native Women's Association of Canada.